Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. This program is an invitation to join myself, Magla Pillay, and Sister Denise, who has been a Raj Yoga teacher with the Brahmakumaris for several decades. The format of the show is Socratic dialogue. This means a philosophical method of systematic doubt and questioning of another to elicit a clear expression of a truth supposed to be knowable by all rational beings. We will be taking up a wide variety of subjects related to moral and ethical values. We will be questioning some of the world's conventional views on these matters. We will analyze and dialogue the topics in order to gain greater insight and perhaps even uncover new foundations as to how we formulate our value systems. Everyone is concerned about doing the right thing. Paradoxically, it has been found that most people act against their own conscience. We will be investigating as to why this is so. Sister Denise, a very, very warm welcome to today's show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The topic that I'd like to take up today is something that is of deep interest to myself, and that is the human conscience. And I think that topic practically encompasses this entire show because of its vastness. What has become of the human conscience?
One thing I discovered in my thinking over a long period of time is that whenever a person does an action, even if it's a thought, a word, against their own conscience, then their conscience loses functionality. That means, because most people several times a day do little or big things against their own conscience, that most people's conscience is not functioning very well. And that means that they cannot refer to it as they would like to. They need to refer to some external moral authority to find out whether what they are planning to do or say or think is right. And of course, don't always have access to that. And so the state of human conscience is not so good. It's dysfunctional, it's sick, it's in need of repair, overhaul, renewal, and definitely it needs to be looked at.
Okay. I liked the terminology that you used towards the end. What does a human being have to do? What methods does he have to employ to do all of that? To repair, to overhaul, to fix his conscience?
Conversely, every time you follow the voice of conscience, the voice itself becomes louder, so you can hear it better, and it becomes stronger, more functional, and it repairs itself.
Okay. Sister Denise, the million-dollar question for me is, why has humanity as a whole reached this point where it doesn't matter anymore what's right and what's wrong? It's people are in a state of, for want of a better word, limbo, because the world has become such a strange place where people who act against their conscience are considered to be weak and to lose, whereas people who blast their conscience to smithereens succeed and gain. How has the world become such a place?
Well, if a person follows their conscience, but the conscience is weak, and the voice of conscience has been suppressed, then it's very difficult to follow the conscience. You don't have faith in yourself. You become very reactive. And this is what people are really doing. They're reacting to
often very traumatic incidents, so that people are operating in a way that is very, very far from the dignity of humanity that we, I think, were originally endowed with. So we have to really think about, have we been developing, have we been progressing, have we been becoming more civilized and more developed as a species, or is it maybe going the other way?
Okay, so if somebody has come to a point in their lives when they realize that their value system is non-existent, and they've got to do something right now or else, how would you begin to do this? Because there are many who believe that once Humpty Dumpty has fallen, he cannot be put back together again.
Well, this is the problem, because I think that it's quite rare for people to realize that their value system has fallen apart and no longer functional. People who are reactive and maybe a little bit fanatical in their beliefs, they think that their value system is the same thing as being reactive. And perhaps they have to be in a very, very difficult, troubled situation before they will introspect and question the validity of how they're behaving, you know. And very often people just take that reactive state to the grave, and they never really do this. But I think if people are watching the program, they're at least interested in this subject. And perhaps some of the things that we're saying might trigger a person's curiosity to really look at themselves and say, well, how do I check out in this respect? And that might be a good reason to really check.
Do people actually understand the link between their conscience, or the state of their conscience, and the level of happiness and sorrow in their lives? Is there a link?
Well, there is. There's absolutely a link, but I don't think people would make the connection.
Okay, and would you tell us what the connection is?
The thing is, your happiness is determined by the degree to which you're being true to yourself. If we say that the fundamentals of the self are purity, peace, power, love, and bliss, these foundational qualities, and so if you're being true to yourself as that, then, you know, your conscience is going to get activated just like that. But because people do not think of themselves in a spiritual way, they think of themselves as macho guys, or with money, or, you know, the identity is different. You know, the identity is very physical, according to their financial power, their weapon power, their political power. And what will happen with that is a person who identifies this way gets what we call the arrogance of position, or the arrogance of wealth, and then they are out of touch with their own spirit. So the spirit is, to all intents and purposes, in a coma, not functioning. It's been sidelined, and so there is suffering, and then you can build in more arrogance to cover over the suffering, and something will happen where the suffering comes bursting through, and then you're not strong enough to handle it. So that becomes a very critical moment in a person's life, which might in some cases trigger a person to really look at themselves, but in other cases it will trigger a person to become even worse.
Are you saying then that anyone who's interested and determined can rebuild their conscience into something and become someone that they are proud of, as opposed to be ashamed of?
Yes, because that's the origin of a person. You know, there is a problem in the external moral authority ideology, and that is that a person is fundamentally a sinner, and that the external moral authorities take it upon themselves to fix that person and make them good. This is not true. A person is fundamentally pure, and they stray away from that, or due to their personal weaknesses, they start doing things which are against their best interests, and so they start to suffer because of that. But it's simply a matter of returning to your origins rather than creating something that isn't there, you see. And for a human being to say, I will make you into a moral person, is in many ways the height of arrogance.
Okay, so it's a journey of the self?
It's a return to your origins. And so the premise that we're operating from in spirituality is to say that you are essentially, originally, a very pure, perfect being. And over time, you have lost power, you've lost your way, and so you've ended up in a situation which is very far away from your own truth. And by turning within, you can return back to it because you lost it by being so externally oriented.
Okay. I think not many people understand that their conscience is within their own hands, but they've given up that power to others. And it's so good to hear you say that it is up to, it's an individual thing. It's not necessarily a collective thing. So, Denise, to what extent does one need external support to rebuild one's conscience? Because the image that comes to my mind is of a bricklayer. You have to build your conscience brick by brick up again. And in order to keep the wall, you've got to adhere to it in the first place. Okay, so to what extent does external support play a role, and where is such support available?
In one way, your best support is the invisible, discarnate being of light, which many call God. And once a person really starts to think about these things, what that does is it activates your connection with God and brings God into the picture so that you can start to receive help from that, because God responds very well to and very powerfully when a person takes a step of courage. And it's one of the laws of spirituality. You take one step of courage and God will give you 1,000 steps of help. But that step of courage is a risk. So when a person does that, that's a big thing, you know. And so not only will they get help from God, but very often they'll get help from very high-minded people who will say, look, this person is really trying to get their life together. Let us, you know, give good wishes. Let us give support. Let us participate in this, because the human spirit is yearning to become full, complete, beautiful, to return to that harmony and purity from which it has strayed and in which it is very uncomfortable.
Sister Denise, I have a friend who often says to me the following. I'd love to be peaceful and serene, she says, but unfortunately it's only when I lose my temper with the people around me at work that I achieve the results that I want. When I speak to them in a calm and collected manner, they don't listen to me. And the reason I'm using this as an example is because many people find that if they are a good person, in inverted commas. They aren't taken seriously, they aren't respected. But whereas if they show their dark side, then they get results.
I think that there is a problem here. And the problem is that the conventional ethical ideas have given a message that if you are speaking with authority, that's your dark side. That's a lie. It's when you're completely out of control that you're in your dark side. So if a person is speaking firmly and powerfully, that's part of their good side. That's not anger, you see. But I think that in the desire to get people, women in particular, you know, they will give you the message. So if you're authoritative and firm, then you're unfeminine, and that's really bad. We don't like unfeminine women because they're scary. And so it's a kind of a propaganda exercise to get a person to buy into the idea that speaking with in a weak way is good and speaking with authority is a vice, but they haven't quite told you the truth. And I think that is where we need to challenge the prevailing message.
Okay, so the second part of my question was, people find that if they act from the dark side, that's then they see results. And so they think, why bother being a conscionable human being? Why bother doing the right thing? Because it's people don't take me seriously. People in the corporate world would say this. People who are the top of their profession in most spheres would say that they've got to cross a line before they get respected, seen or heard, whether you're male or female. Somebody else will say to you, I live in a country where you know, corruption is the order of the day. So what then?
You know, one of the things that spirituality says is we're actors. And an actor who is performing forcefully, powerfully, they are always in control of what they're doing, which means it's not their dark side. The dark side is when you lose control. When you're in control, that's not your dark side. Now, you will say to me, ah, but we have a lot of examples of people who are really coming from a very evil place and they look like they're very in control, but they're disconnected from their heart. You see? So in that respect, although they may be very cool, they're so cool as to be ice cold. And so in that case, that person has become disconnected from their sensibilities, so that is also out of control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're really looking at very different criteria, very different approaches than what you get in the conventional way of describing what's good behavior and what's not good behavior and where these lines are. And I think this whole thing has to be rethought and deeply discussed. You know, if you have a bunch of people who are in powerful positions in the corporate world and similar positions, really seriously talking about these things where everybody knows what everybody's talking about, you can have a very valuable dialogue and you can actually set the lines within that group of exactly where do you cross the line into something that is really a vice. You see, because if you say being spiritual means being meek and mild, that's propaganda. Because the original meaning of meek is disciplined. But people have changed the meaning to mean a pushover, you see. And this is why you've got bad press for spirituality among powerful people, because if you get someone who's really powerful and really spiritual, that combination is a bit much for people who are based in selfishness and arrogance to handle, because they will be beaten at their own game.
Okay.
Very interesting. Does that make sense to you?
It does, actually. Yeah. Is there a difference between a female conscience and a male conscience?
There might be some difference in sensitivity because, you know, in a general way, males and females operate a little bit differently. But otherwise, if you go back to the idea of a being, a soul being genderless, and the conscience being part of the soul, I think that in that sense, no, it's the same thing. But any soul in a body is influenced by that body, and so there's a bias, definitely.
So Denise, what does what role does pain play in the human conscience? Because it must affect it somehow, somewhere, because pain is part of the human experience for many.
Oh yes, I make a difference between pain and suffering.
Okay. What is the difference between pain and suffering?
For me, pain is mandatory, suffering is optional.
So, okay, that's another bomb. Go on, tell us more.
Pain, I find, is a very great teacher. And pain is something that people cannot manage very well and don't have a very good relationship with. So normally people's relationship with pain is they think pain is bad, they don't like it, they will do anything to avoid it, take drugs in incremental doses, up to morphine's about the best painkiller, but it's highly addictive. So it's very important for a person to understand their pain, because I think everybody has pain. And if you ask a person, what is your pain? That's such a deep question, because it goes to the place where you have buried your sorrow and your trauma and your the Achilles heel, you see, that's your pain. And if you do not go there, look at it, make it talk to you, find the lessons that pain has to tell you, because your pain has to come out. It doesn't belong in the soul, so it has to come out. And it comes out, and if you can't endure it, then it's unbearable suffering. So it's very necessary to sort of expand yourself to the point where you can endure it and embrace it and make it come. And then you become free from what is really known as sin. And to me, there are two kinds of sin. One is negative action that you have performed, causing suffering to another human being. And the second is suffering that you have taken from another human being who wished to make you suffer. And that is also sin for you, because that is also a pain that goes in your soul and contaminates it, you see. So both of these kinds of sin have to come out, and they live in your subconscious, and they have to come into your conscious. That means you have to feel your pain, and then you have to allow it to move away, but it will not leave you until it has communicated its message to you. And that the message...
Pain will not leave you until it has communicated its message to you.
That's right.
Okay. Okay.
And I think the message of pain, it's a very indirect message, huh? But the message of pain is that you're sort of locked into this this thing which we call sin, and it drives your weak actions, which makes you unable to really be in your dignity and your honor, which makes you in survival, which makes you inflict pain on other people, which makes you easily either a victim or a perpetrator. And if you want to be in your honor, in your dignity as a, you know, real qualified human being, you have to allow this pain to come up and tell you where you're off track, as it were, and make you understand what you are, who you are, claim your power, claim your humility, and then it will be your friend.
Pain will be your friend?
Pain will be your friend.
Wow, that's quite something to think about.
It's very deep. I mean, not very many people get there, but
I only know one who has.
Well, such a person who has understood that, they're valuable because they can articulate it, which is so difficult to put into words what that is.
Mm.
Once you can articulate it, you can discuss it.
Okay, the last question I have for you is, to what extent does the subconscious affect the human conscience, or vice versa?
I think the subconscious, if we talk about the subconscious as being the place where your sin lives, it will stop.
Is it where sin lives, or the effect of sin lives?
I call it the place where sin lives.
Okay.
Because sin is not an act so much as the tendency to repeat that type of action.
The habit.
Yes.
Okay.
If you're homicidal, suicidal, whatever the thing happens to be, but you'll want to do it again and again and again. And your pain makes you do it again, and doing it again increases your pain. So it's a vicious circle, and it's subconscious, so you have no control over it. So you want to bring it up to your conscious, where it gets in front of your conscience.
Okay.
You see? But the conscience has to be so clear and so strong to be able to endure seeing such a thing, because you feel shame. And shame is more painful than pain.
Why?
Because it hits you so deep in the soul that you are unworthy, you see. Because you have done, and things have been done to you that are so against what you are as a human being, that you cannot bear it, so you bury it, you see. Because it's unbearable, you just deny it. You see, so denial is a very important factor in this process, and that is what stops the conscience functioning,